Up next, another in our continuing series, look at energy alternatives. Now, what if you could invent the perfect energy source? It would be non-polluting, it would have zero emissions, there would be an endless supply of it, available anywhere in the world without a pipeline or a power line. Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Well, such a source does exist. It's the sun. It's solar energy. Why aren't we using more of the sun? Solar power makes up less than 1% of the world's electricity, according to the Solar Energy Industries Association. And the U.S. isn't at the forefront of developing more solar power. Japan and Germany are leading the way there. But this is about to change because Silicon Valley has discovered solar. The same silicon that goes into making computer chips can be fashioned into making solar cells, into solar panels. And those crafty computer chip entrepreneurs in California now say that they see gold in being green. So for the rest of the hour, we're going to take a look at how solar energy technology is evolving to become competitive with fossil fuels. You know, even the White House has solar panels installed to heat the president's swimming pool and spa. So there. If you'd like to get on the line with us on this conversation, our number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. Let me introduce my guests. Travis Bradford is president and founder of the Prometheus Institute for Sustainable Development. He's also author of the new book, Solar Revolution, the Economic Transformation of the Global Energy Industry. He joins us from WBUR in Boston. Thanks for being with us today, Mr. Bradford.
It's my pleasure, Ira.
You're welcome. Jeffrey Nelson is Solar Technologies Manager at Sandia National Laboratories in Albuquerque, New Mexico. He joins us by phone. Thank you for being with us today.
Yeah, hello, Ira. Thank you.
We're talking about solar this hour and Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Travis, how much has Silicon Valley embraced this now?
Well, we need to separate the technology from the location. What originally happened is that the castoffs from the computer industry, the extra silicon wafers, were used to make components for solar electricity, PV, photovoltaics. And this is a technology that's being deployed in a lot of places around the world. And now it's changing so that the silicon manufacturers that used to be primarily computer businesses are now moving much more into the solar electricity business because of the rapid growth of that technology.
Give us a rundown, Jeff, of the different types of solar power. What do the terms concentrating and photovoltaic mean?
Sure. There's sort of three general solar technologies. One that you're probably most familiar with, solar hot water, where the solar radiation comes in, heats a hot fluid, typically water, and then you use that directly in your home. Solar thermal, or better known as concentrating solar power, is somewhat similar where the solar energy comes in. You heat a hot fluid, but then that hot fluid is used to generate steam for a standard steam turbine generator, which then generates electricity, and then that would be what we would use in our homes or businesses. Solar electric, or photovoltaics, uses the incident solar energy to create electrons or electrical current directly, and then that is converted from the direct current to an AC current that we can then use directly in our homes. Those are the three main ones. In the concentrating area, mirrors are used to try to concentrate the sunlight so that you would have something like a parabolic dish similar to you might see on your direct TV dish on the side of your home. That's used to concentrate the solar radiation anywhere from a few hundred times up to maybe 1,000 or so times the incident flux.
Travis Bradford, why do you think we've been hearing this for years that, you know, solar power is going to be making it someday? Why do you think someday has arrived?
Well, because solar power has enjoyed a declining cost over its life, and the first time solar really became a potential commercially viable technology was in the late 70s and early 80s. Since then, the price of solar electricity has continued to drop at roughly 5 to 6% per annum, so that today, in a number of applications around the world, large mainstream applications, both centralized at the way utilities like to generate power, and more importantly, distributed applications on homes and businesses directly where the energy is needed has become commercially viable, and there's every indication that those costs will continue to drop, making it more commercially viable in lots of locations in the decades to come.
And what's going to drive the cost down?
Well, the way that I address it in the book is really just scale of production, economies of scale, and natural learning. The technologies are still nascent, but already cost-effective, but they're getting more sophisticated and moving from bulk batch processing manufacturing to more inline manufacturing. So the cost reductions that I rely on when making such predictions are really just based on natural learning and economies of scale that are growing. There are many new next generation technologies that could have the potential to dramatically reduce the cost further, but one way or the other, the cost's going to continue to come down.
All right, we'll get into more of those next generation technologies right after we take a break. I'm talking with Travis Bradford, president and founder of the Prometheus Institute for Sustainable Development, author of Solar Revolution, the Economic Transformation of the Global Energy Industry. Jeffrey Nelson is Solar Technologies Manager at Sandia National Laboratories in Albuquerque. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. We're talking about solar. So stay with us. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flato. We're talking this hour about the future of solar energy with Travis Bradford, president and founder of the Prometheus Institute for Sustainable Development, author of the new book, Solar Revolution, the Economic Transformation of the Global Energy Industry. Jeffrey Nelson, Solar Technologies Manager at Sandia National Laboratories in Albuquerque. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. Jeffrey Nelson, give us an idea of what kind of cutting-edge new solar technologies you folks are working on and others that you know about.
Yeah, I think as Travis indicated, many of the cost reductions in manufacturing are coming from manufacturing innovations and scale-up. But at the same time, there's an awful lot of work going on at our laboratory and at other laboratories like the National Renewable Energy Lab. They're all in the Department of Energy and in industry trying to develop new materials that are based on the premise of using less raw materials, typically used now in the silicon based photovoltaics that probably dominates 95% of the market. But these new materials are offering great promise in terms of reducing the overall cost. These are materials that we would refer to as thin film materials, cad telluride, copper, indium, gallium, selenide, other types of semiconductors that lower the use of raw materials, thereby lowering the cost. But at the same time, the efficiency decreases as you use less materials. But the role of many of the science activities is to try to drive up the efficiencies of these new materials that are coming into the market through things like nanotechnology that we hear a lot about these days. And so I think...
Would nanotechnology do for you?
Yeah, what nanotechnology does for you right now, many of the things that are being done in solar or in the silicon integrated circuit are all nanotechnology-like things where you're dealing with the structure of materials on the order of, atomic dimensions, where you're ordering the atoms to better improve the absorption of the sunlight as well as the direct conversion of that sunlight in the material to electrical current. So nanotechnology and other materials efforts are trying to improve how that energy is converted within the material to electricity.
Mm-hmm. There are some other advantages to the technologies that he's mentioning. A lot of talk has been made about whether solar in large scale would be a visual impairment. Some people don't like the look of big solar modules on their house. But the next generation of technologies, and many of the ones that Jeff mentioned, will allow for incorporating solar electricity generation into the materials that are already being used on buildings. In some cases, they'll be formable into roof tiles. In other cases, they may be transparent or semi-transparent. And so from a market application standpoint, there are a lot of benefits in addition to the efficiency gains that he mentioned.
Mm-hmm. What about tax breaks and things like that to encourage solar use?
Well, the go ahead.
No, I'm saying, how effective are they? Are we seeing more of them?
Well, the industry owes its current resurgence to some very progressive programs by the Japanese government in the mid-1990s, and then the German government coming on strong in the last 5 years. And those programs were specifically designed to develop both the technology and the markets. The Japanese program was designed not only to do both of those things, but to self-liquidate, so that now, in 2005, they managed to get rid of it. So now there is a fully functioning market in Japan without significant subsidy. A number of the programs in Germany and other places in Europe, as well as a number of states in the United States, have followed various models of these programs. And they have done a really good job of stimulating the demand for solar energy in those markets and the resulting manufacturing activity to meet that demand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also, this is Jeff, I might make another comment in terms of not only the materials work that's being done, but also there's new initiatives, one presidential initiative, the Solar America Initiative, that really aims at solving many of the problems that that are out there in terms of installing solar in homes and businesses, and that is trying to integrate these things into more reliable, cost-effective, more functional systems that that you can put onto your house and businesses. So looking at these from a systems perspective is also becoming more and more important as we try to integrate these into our homes and our everyday life.
So retrofitting is going to be
But in a much more robust way than we've done typically up to this point.
Such as
you would, you know, if you go home and you want your washing machine to always work, right, or your dishwasher, you don't want to have to deal with that. And solar has made a lot of progress in that area, but continuing to push that system integration of the components that make up a PV system, not only the cells, modules, the conversion device, but integrating those things into a complete system that is what you might call bulletproof. That's kind of the direction.
So they run when the sun doesn't shine, is what you're saying?
Well, no, they don't run when the sun doesn't shine. They just run much more reliable. Uh-huh. And the homeowner, for example, doesn't really have to be an expert in the PV area to keep it working.
Gotcha. You don't have to be a high-techy
That's
person.
That's right.
I'm also intrigued. We were talking before about these thin films, Travis. Are you saying that you might see coatings on buildings and not even know? You think there might be a coat of paint when they're actually the solar panels on the buildings?
Well, the paint-based applications are probably still a few years off, but there are some other interesting camouflage technologies where either the thin films or even in some cases some very aesthetically pleasing regular silicon-based technologies are incorporated into the building materials, into tiles, so that they become effectively invisible unless you know what you're looking for. The paint-based applications, the formable applications, imagine the top of your PC being photoelectric so that it charges your computer while it's sitting on your desk. These are kinds of things where that we do need additional technology development and can help supplement the power. But it's not that these are not going to be the mainstream applications of either centralized electricity generation or homes and businesses on a distributed electricity generation fashion that's really going to drive what I expect will be a $1 trillion industry in the next few decades.
Are we expecting to see fragmentation then of the grid as more people are able to generate their own electricity community-wise or even individually?
Well, yes, except I don't think it's an either-or scenario. I think that not dissimilar to some technological transformations we've witnessed in the last 20 years, mainframe computers to PCs and networks is a really good example. We founded Economic to put lots of PCs with lots of processing power at the point of use as opposed to the old dummy terminals. And we didn't eliminate the mainframes, just like we're going to see a lot more distributed solar being integrated into buildings, into homes, both retrofits and, my belief, is new construction. And we're not going to get rid of the centralized power stations. We're just going to end up with a much more robust and distributed grid than we currently have.
Are we going to see the computer industry, which knows how to make these silicon chips for computers, are we going to be seeing them turning their dies and their widgets into making solar panels? I mean, they know how to deal with work with silicon. They're getting involved, are they not?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good point. Of course, the processes are somewhat different, but the skills and the competencies have a large amount of overlap. I think you'll see some entrance from the IC industry, but you'll also see entrances from the flat panel display market. So that's another driver. Those two industries will help also drive the cost of solar down. If you look at a amorphous silicon type solar cell, it shares many, many similarities with what you might see on your flat panel display.
And that's what's been that's what has occurred in Japan, which has, as I mentioned, been a leader in this field, is that the companies now that are providing solar electricity are companies like Sanyo, Sharp, Kyocera. These are companies with lots of competence in electronic components, some with deep competence in flat panel displays. And so for them, it is they have a new product, a new market that they can go into. And so for the first time, they can get into the power generation, and which gives them lots of interesting synergy opportunities. And they also have the capital. They also have the political clout to ensure that their products find markets and that any economic or political obstacles can be overcome.
Yeah, I think a good example of that is Applied Materials, as you know, is a company that participates heavily in the integrated circuit and flat panel display, has recently announced they're moving into the solar business.
An American company.
Yes, that's right.
So we'll
California.
Yeah, we'll start to see more American companies move in. Does that begin to then compete with yourself? Do you then start running out of raw material, out of silicon?
Well, in principle, there's lots of raw material. We can start with sand to make silicon, so we have plenty of sand around. But it's a matter of, as the market expands, the folks and companies who take those raw materials and purify it into silicon and make those into silicon wafers are now having the confidence to help expand their manufacturing capability, and that will only help all of us.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. Let's go to David in Banks, Oregon. Hi, David.
Hi, how are you?
Hi.
I'm calling because as somebody who works in the semiconductor industry and somebody who's been following solar for a long time, it's my understanding that there is quite a bit of toxic materials that are used to create photovoltaics and semiconductors. And so I am concerned at the characterization that the sun or collecting the sun's rays is non-polluting. Yes, we have infrastructure in place. However, these are some pretty highly toxic stuff that are used to make it, and I wanted to get feedback from your panel.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Jeff?
Yeah, I can comment. I believe that the amount of material that we're talking about in general is large, but the amount of toxic materials that would go into making a solar cell are quite minimal. Once you have the silicon wafer, which is a more process or energy intensive step to make, making that wafer, for example, into a solar cell takes only very small amounts of additional materials like metals, like gold, and there's some deposition of impurities into the material, like boron and phosphorus, but those are very, very, very low levels.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about
order of 10 to the 6th or 7th of what the existing silicon wafer is.
Sorry. We're talking about solar energy this hour on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Jeff, you've talked about how proud the government is of its solar research that's going on. The president has solar panels installed on buildings right at the White House. How come we never see him out there standing next to them showing off what solar is doing to heat a swimming pool?
Well, I'm not sure about at the White House, but back in August, I guess a little over a year ago, he was out at Sandia National Labs at our solar energy facility.
Well, you can look on the web and see the panels at the White House.
Yes. I'm not sure about that, but he's been to...
What if it was an official White House statement? Would you believe me then?
Yes.
I can produce that also.
Several solar companies trying to really understand what the market and technology is at. So yeah. He's done some homework these days.
Travis?
Well, I believe I remember seeing an article that there are also solar installations on the ranch at Crawford, but I'd have to double-check my facts on that.
Just to make one quick question, as I had mentioned before, I think, we do have a new Presidential Solar America initiative that the focus of that initiative over the next 9 years is to drive industry teams to work together to bring the cost of solar down to the level of 10 cents or less a kilowatt hour, which mm-hmm. makes it a really viable option for homeowners across the U.S.
How do you compete with the other alternative energy people, Travis, who say, we have wind power, now we're already down to 6 cents a kilowatt hour or cheaper?
Well,
wait for solar.
That's wonderful. I'm glad that the wind has become cost-effective in so many applications, and the wind energy industry is enjoying tremendous growth from that. The difference between solar and most of the other, if not all of the other alternative energy technologies, is where it can be deployed. Wind really requires large-scale, large fields of very big turbines to make energy to those levels of cost that you mentioned. And so it's still going to have to be generated in a large centralized way. Solar actually allows people to, in effect, circumvent the grid and put the power on at their point of use on their side of the meter. And that creates a new set of economic choices. And it's that's really going to drive the change. I certainly think that we need to explore all of the alternatives to address some of the issues and risks of our current energy infrastructure, which include lack of access to domestic supplies or lack of reliable access to domestic supplies and the environmental implications of that. So,
how many years do you think it's going to take before solar takes over as a main source?
Well, I get the question a lot, but the reality is that the solar revolution is already here. It's already happening, and the industry is already growing at 30 to 40% per annum, though granted off of a small base. But there are every indication that it's going to continue to do that, and pretty soon those kinds of growth rates off of not-so-small bases tends to be large amounts of solar being deployed. But the most – people think just because it's going to take a long time to change our total energy infrastructure to be predominantly alternative energy or predominantly solar means that it's probably not something we should be paying attention to. But much sooner than that, in the next 10 to 15 years, the majority of our energy, new energy generation that's installed every year will be alternative, of which solar is going to be a major component. And I think that for most people, it's even more important to understand when they actually know that this is going to happen. And big businesses already get this. Capital markets already get this. Billions of dollars of capital has flooded into the solar energy industry in the last 12 to 18 months. And so I think that the people that are making plans out 5, 10, 15 years to make sure that they're at the cutting edge of the energy get it.
I have to interrupt. I'm sorry. Thank you, Travis Bradford, author of Solar Revolution, Economic Transformation of the Global Energy Industry, and Jeffrey Nelson, Solar Technologies Manager at Sandia National Laboratories in Albuquerque, New Mexico.